You're listening to LawPod UK from the creators of the UK Human Rights Blog. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at 1 Crown Office Row.
Hello, I'm David Hart from 1 Crown Office Row, and I shall be talking to Rosalind English, who has been responsible for all the podcasts so far. Tables turn today, she will be the interviewee. We'll look at a case, SB against NHS England, decided by Mrs. Justice Andrews on the 8th of August, just as much of the law was packing its suitcases and its sun cream. It caught my attention because it's a successful challenge to an NHS decision refusing to prescribe a drug. So, Rosalind, let's set the scene. What problems does the child have?
Well, he's a 7-year-old child and he suffers from severe autism, as well as an inherited condition called phenylketonuria, or PKU for short. It's an inherited metabolic condition which inhibits the body's ability to digest protein. The particular type of protein is an amino acid called phenylalanine, which builds up in the blood and affects the functioning of the brain.
What is the standard approach to limiting the build-up of phenylalanine?
The least invasive way of controlling PKU is reducing the amount of protein in the food intake. This involves supplying the patient with protein supplements to ensure normal growth and development. But with a child, this is often difficult because it means they can't eat the sort of things that children love, like ice cream or custard. But in fact, in the case of this child, his two siblings, who don't suffer autism but also have PKU, their condition is met by their diet.
So tell us a little bit about the drug in issue, which is called Kuvan.
Kuvan is a drug which reduces the level of phenylalanine in the blood, which makes the patient more protein tolerant. This in turn means they're able to eat more normal foods, and then, of course, the dietary regime can be relaxed.
The child and his family had got the support of one of his treating consultants, Dr. Santra. What was Dr. Santra saying?
Well, what his doctor was saying was that because of his severe autism, it wasn't possible for his parents to manage his condition through dietary means alone.
How did NHS England get involved in this case?
Well, they received an individual funding request, or IFR, from this family for treatment.
So what are the key questions that NHS England must answer before it grants this sort of funding?
NHS England has a wide discretion to decide whether or not to provide treatment. But its policy is to only agree to treatment if there are exceptional clinical circumstances and the decision to treat is based exclusively on clinical factors. It's important to remember that there's no freestanding right to medical treatment under the European Convention or anything else. The NHS is subject to financial constraints and it can't possibly fund every healthcare treatment for every patient. Indeed, it has an express statutory duty to balance its budget. So any treatment must be based on clinical factors alone. This is obviously to avoid giving preferential treatment to one patient over another on non-medical grounds.
What does the policy on the drug itself say?
Well, the NHS policy is not to fund routine treatment of PKU patients with the drug Kuvan. They acknowledge that it is effective in the short term because it enables children to eat normal food. But they've concluded that there's not enough evidence to justify routine long-term treatment because it doesn't lead to improvements in general health.
OK, so tell us a bit more about what Dr. Santra was saying.
Well, what his doctor was saying was that whilst other children with PKU might be able to maintain good control of their blood protein levels with dietary treatment alone, this child, due to his autism, couldn't. And if he were to respond to the drug, it would bring the level of protein in his blood down to the target range, beyond which he would run the risk of suffering long-term brain damage.
Now, I think the panel made a key finding in favour of the child.
The panel did find that he met the exceptional clinical circumstance threshold. This is the screening stage of the test.
But was there, in its view, robust evidence of clinical effectiveness?
Well, this is the next stage of the test. Even if the patient passes the exceptionality threshold, they may not need the clinical effectiveness criterion, and in this case, the child did not.
What did the judge think that phrase meant?
There's no actual definition of the concept of clinical effectiveness. Basically, Mrs. Justice Andrews was at pains to emphasise that clinical effectiveness does not mean long-term clinical effectiveness. In the case of this child, in other words, the effectiveness of the drug would not lead to any cognitive improvement, or any improvement in his general health even, just the improvement of his tolerance of the protein in his blood.
So what should the panel have asked itself, according to the judge?
Well, in legal terms, the panel had not asked itself the right question before deciding that the clinical effectiveness test was not met. What they should have asked is there robust evidence that this drug is clinically effective on the basis that the target outcome was not long-term improvement, but simply reduction of blood protein levels beyond which there was a risk of long-term brain damage? The judge's interpretation of the panel's reasoning was that they hadn't appreciated how dangerous the levels of protein were to the patient. She said the panel betrayed a fundamental misunderstanding of the case that had been put to them. The treatment being sought was the only way to maintain consistent safe levels of phenylalanine in the patient's blood, because that wasn't being achieved by dietary means.
What conclusion did the judge reach on the basis of that misunderstanding?
The supposed absence of clinical effectiveness was a specific reason for turning down the application, and that, in the judge's view, was such an important error that it warranted quashing the decision altogether and sending it back to the panel for reconsideration.
The judge elsewhere, in her judgment, identified what she described as a catch-22 scenario. Can you just describe what that was?
Yes. The problem for the patient in this case was that his PKU wasn't severe enough. He suffered from a mild to moderate condition, which meant a good chance of responding well to the drug, Kuvan. But this also led to the decision that he didn't need the treatment. But if his blood levels were much higher, the panel would have refused the treatment on the basis of clinical effectiveness because he wouldn't have responded to the drug at all.
Why wasn't the judge ordering that Kuvan be prescribed, having reached the conclusions which she had?
Well, that wasn't her job. That is still a decision for the panel to make. That's because it's the panel's duty to make decisions within a system of finite resources, but in accordance with the law. She does warn the family not to go away with the impression that their successful judicial review means that they have won the right to treatment. As she says, funding a treatment for an individual child in the absence of sufficient evidence of clinical or cost-effectiveness depletes the resources available to meet the needs of other children, whose welfare must also be considered.
In the course of quite a long judgment, does she give any other steers in respect of the case?
Well, she does say that the cost of the drug might be reduced in the future, for example, when it comes out of patent protection. And she also says the panel might take into consideration the costs to the NHS of the child incurring irreversible brain damage caused by ineffective control of protein in his diet.
So far we've been looking at ground one, upon which the child was successful, but his lawyers also argued two other grounds. And the first of those was that the panel had failed to have regard to their duty to promote the welfare of the child under the Children Act 2004 in the context of looking at this particular application. What was the judge's answer to that?
She was very careful to point out that the NHS's duty is not focused on individuals. In carrying out its duty to provide health care, it has to pay due regard to the welfare of the child anyway. There's no additional obligation on the panel to have regard to the welfare of the child, since this is something that's an integral part of the decision-making process. The IFL policy has been drafted in such a way as to be fair and consistent.
So that's dealt with the second ground, and then turning to the third ground, which was quite closely related to it. It was said that the panel had failed properly to evaluate the impact of its proposed decision upon the child, and that was in breach of its obligations in respect to the child's best interests. How was this particular claim put in human rights terms?
They chose to frame it under the right to respect for family and private life under Article 8 of the European Convention, as I mentioned before, as well as Article 3 of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. But this didn't gain any traction with the court. It's well established that a refusal to fund a particular course of medical treatment doesn't interfere with anyone's rights, child or not.
So, quashed on ground one and no favourable decision taken on grounds two and three, and the matter is referred back to the panel for its fresh decision, and let's see what happens when that occurs.
You'll find a link to this interesting judgment on the UK Human Rights blog, which will also give some more details about some of the issues raised in this case.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.